We are now 7 days into a partial government shutdown over border wall funding. This morning on Twitter, President Trump once again threatened to shut down the southern border if he doesn't get the $5 billion he wants to build a wall.
But Democrats who take control in the House next week aren't budging. And the president's acting chief of staff said today the president will stay in Washington over the New Year's holiday instead of going to Florida. Let's convene our Friday politics roundtable. Thank goodness they are in town. Beth Fooey, senior politics editor at NBC News. Hi, Beth.
Hi there.
And Kelsey Snell, congressional reporter for NPR. Hi, Kelsey.
Hi there.
Let's start with the shutdown. On CBS this morning, White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders was asked if the president would accept less money than he wants, that $5 billion, maybe $2 billion, in wall funding, just to end this shutdown. Let's listen.
Look, we've made that clear to the Democrats. I'm not going to negotiate in the press, but the president has been willing to negotiate on this point, and the Democrats have not been willing to do anything.
Well, look, there was a bipartisan short-term spending measure passed by the Senate. It was thought the president would sign it. And then he was berated by conservative radio hosts, changed his tune. Last year, there was a bipartisan immigration measure, including construction of the president's proposed wall, just over a 10-year period, not immediately. He's had opportunities. Beth, start with you. What's your sense about whether he and maybe even the Republicans really want to get the wall and lose this rallying point?
Well, I think he wants the wall because that was certainly the central promise of his campaign in 2016 was to build that wall along the Mexican border. But of course, at the time, the rallying cry was, and Mexico will pay for it. Now that we know that that's not going to happen, Trump has had to recalibrate a little bit, but he's definitely sticking with his central campaign promise of that wall. Now, the problem is that the timing is all wrong. He should have accepted the deal that was discussed earlier this year, as you mentioned, Robin. It was a great deal compared to what they're discussing now. It would have been money for the wall, much more money than they're talking about now, mm-hmm. in exchange for codifying DACA. The president
This is the path to citizenship
mm-hmm. for those young mm-hmm. dreamers who came to the country brought here illegally by their parents. That deal was taken off the table. President Trump rejected it. And since that deal was put aside, Democrats won the House. Mm-hmm. So the negotiating posture for both sides is very different now. And Democrats really don't have much reason to compromise with President Trump mm-hmm. here. So he's lost a lot of his leverage in the months that passed since that original deal was discussed.
Well, Kelsey, give us a sense of what the strategy is from the Democrats' point of view. They seem to be taking a low-profile approach this week.
Well, part of that is because they are about to take control of the House. As we've mentioned, they've got just about a week left before they start swearing in Democrats. And their feeling is that they can come in and immediately pass a spending bill, likely one that looks very much like what already passed in the Senate. And then it will be up to the president and the ball will be in his court. They're looking at a situation where they think they can't lose here. I've talked to many Democrats who say that they want the president to have the burden and the onus of saying, I'm refusing to sign this. I'm refusing to reopen the government. And while Republicans think that that'll be a bad look for them to start their first couple of days of control of the House with a fight about a shutdown, the border wall is a major political issue for them, and it is a major core issue for them. We've heard House Minority Leader, soon likely to be Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, refer to the immigration policies of President Trump as immoral. Mm-hmm. When you start talking about policy in those terms, it changes the calculus completely, away from being something where you are having a policy debate and something when you're talking about core beliefs.
Well, but Beth, most people, you're talking about, you know, how this is hitting the electorate and the base, but don't polls show that most people are blaming President Trump for the shutdown and they don't want the wall?
Right. Most people are. The polling is showing that very clearly, that more Americans blame the president than congressional Democrats for the shutdown. And let's also remember, Robin, immigration was a core issue that Trump tried to hit very hard in the days leading up to the midterms. He really refocused the whole discussion around immigration and people coming through the border and the caravan and bringing disease and drugs and all of that, shifted away from what Republican leaders in Congress had hoped he'd be talking about, which was the economy. And that calculation did not work for President Trump. Voters overwhelmingly rejected that language about the border and immigration and such, and especially in those suburban areas that used to be very receptive to Republican candidates. They voted for Democrats. So his calculation didn't work then, and it's surprising that he would think it would work better now.
Trump took his first trip to visit troops in a combat zone this week, and he was criticized for politicizing that trip. In a speech to troops, he said the U.S. shouldn't be doing the fighting for every nation on Earth without being reimbursed. Let's listen.
So we're not the suckers of the world. We're no longer the suckers, folks. And people aren't looking at us as suckers.
And on All Things Considered yesterday, General John Allen, who once led U.S. and NATO troops in Afghanistan, was asked if he was offended by that comment. Here's what he said.
I am, because somehow in those comments, he diminishes the sacrifices of our troops.
Kelsey, what struck you about the president's visit and the criticism he's been receiving since?
Well, the thing that I think is very, very striking about the criticism in particular is that it seems to be quite bipartisan. And it is part of a long series now, a growing series of times when Republicans have been dismayed about the way this president handles himself on the foreign stage and in the global realm. There are a lot of concerns that he is looking at right now, filling a number of jobs related to national security and homeland that they're wondering what kind of people the president is going to pick and whether or not the president will now have an opportunity to make a major shakeup to the way that American foreign policy is handled. It is not what Republicans thought that they were going to get, despite the fact that Trump was pretty clear during the campaign about his feelings about America needing to be more of an isolationist country. So there is a lot of angst happening in both among Republicans and Democrats. And I wouldn't be totally surprised if this becomes a major issue as they go into confirmations to fill positions like, you know, the Attorney General or the Secretary of Defense.
I want to ask you about that, Beth. But before, just a comment about hearing the president standing in front of troops and saying that previous to this time, which would presumably be, you know, the last 10 years of the war in Afghanistan or Iraq, you know, American troops there were suckers. You know, you just ask a Vietnam War veteran. There's nothing worse than thinking you were a sucker. So a lot of response to that. But who does step into that role of Secretary of Defense, working alongside somebody who has said these kinds of things to troops? The president said Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan could be there for a long time, that he's in no rush to fill that position after the forced resignation, the early resignation of Jim Mattis. So, you know, Beth, your thoughts about not having a defense secretary or someone to talk to him, apparently, about how to talk to the military?
Well, and not just the military, but as Kelsey was saying, his kind of whole overseas posture has been criticized recently. And that comes in part because he's just relying on very little expertise. I mean, not only does he not have a permanent Secretary of Defense right now, the State Department's very thinly staffed, the diplomatic corps very thinly staffed. We've seen this president sort of preside over a shrinkage of the U.S. government, which, you know, perhaps sounds good in theory to some conservatives who think that the federal government is too big. But you need people. You need people in these positions, particularly when dealing with delicate foreign policy matters. You just don't. The president ought not to be blundering into things overseas without speaking to people who have experience in those regions and in talking to members of the military, talking to leaders of other countries, and understanding that there is a protocol in the way that people are expected to behave. Now, of course, President Trump has fashioned himself as a disruptor. That's a lot of why he was elected. But whether this is an appropriate realm for him to be doing that kind of disruption is really up for question.
This was a week in which we saw the worst Christmas day for stocks ever and the biggest point gain for the Dow ever. And it continues. The volatility continues. Kelsey, how worried is the White House about this? I'm just reading a CNBC story posted today that says that a Trump administration official asked an investor for advice on the markets amid the wild ride for stocks, and that one of the pieces of advice that he got was tell Trump to stop criticizing the Fed chair.
Well, that point about not criticizing the Fed chair seems to be a serious and ongoing theme among economists and lawmakers and pretty much anybody watching this from a professional standpoint. However, I think that there is a thing that's happening here that we see happen all the time where people are taking the opportunity to choose which things that they are going to give the president credit for. So you see the White House giving the president credit for the times when the market is on the upswing and backing away from the times when things are on the downswing. Now, that is not uncommon for presidents in general. That is something that just happens in politics. But
he takes more credit in the good times than I've seen a president's take in the past.
Because there is the peril of then being in ownership of the downside.
Yeah. Look, we only have about a minute left. And in that, we're going to ask each of you, your reporters, you like to live in the moment and in real time. But we want each of you to give us a prediction for the next year. Beth?
Yeah, I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk about the 2020 presidential race, which is going to start in earnest probably in the next month or so. Right now, we've got about 30 Democrats looking to jump in, which is pretty extraordinary.
I think Jeremy's looking to jump in.
Yeah, right.
I think Jeremy should. It might also get cut down to about 15, which is still a very large number, particularly when you're talking about campaigning in those small early states, Iowa and New Hampshire, how they're going to absorb 15 pretty credible potential Democratic presidential candidates is going to be quite something to see.
We're going to have to give Kelsey the next 30. Go ahead, Kelsey.
I will just say, I'll keep it quick, that I imagine that politics will remain unpredictable. And so my prediction is just unpredictable politics.
Wow. You're going out on a limb there, Kelsey.
Kelsey Snell, congressional reporter for NPR, and Beth Fooey, senior politics editor at NBC News. Happy New Year to both of you. Thank you.
Happy New Year
to you.